Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody. This is Sally L. Cordy, and welcome to Public Advocate. Today, the show is going to be about vaccines and veterans. This is in regard to Senate Bill number S-1203. And I was alerted to this by a veteran by the name of Anita Stewart, who is very concerned, and I would read you her comment, except that she's on the line and she can speak for herself. So let me pick up right away. Hello,
hi,
Stewart.
This
welcome
is
Public Advocate.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate the ability to be able to speak about this on the air. I think many people need to know about this and how in danger this puts all of us veterans.
Yes, and where did you serve? When did you serve? And what exactly is the threat that veterans are facing?
I served in the Air Force for 4 years. I'm also a military widow. I served with Strategic Air Command, which, of course, is a command that doesn't exist anymore. And I worked in military intelligence. My husband died under mysterious circumstances while I was active duty. And 2 years later, his brother's plane went down and he died in Norway. He was an A-10 pilot. So between both my husband, my brother-in-law, my father, my stepfather, my brother, my stepbrothers, we've all served, and I come from a military family.
Well, I know the recommended adult vaccine schedule is quite staggering, and I will put that in the comment area. I'm wondering, I'm assuming that the recommended adult vaccine schedule is what they are referring to in regard to veterans, they being adults. Let me tell you, if you count the number of vaccines from the age of 19 to, let's say, you were to live to 80, it would be 91 shots for women and 94 shots, as many as 91 shots for women, as many as 94 shots for men. And that does not mean doses, because many of those shots are multi-dosed, like the DTaP, which is diphtheria, tetanus, and pertussis, and the MMR, which is measles, mumps, and rubella. So that's a lot of shots, considering no shots are required currently for people of our age.
It's, you know, I think what's even more dangerous with this, not just the amount of the shots, which are on the CDC regular adult schedule, but the fact that so many veterans already have multiple different types of conditions that can be adversely affected by the ingredients of these vaccinations and shots. And I don't think any of this has been taken into consideration.
Right. I always say servicemen, second only to infants, servicemen receive an astonishing amount of vaccinations.
Right. And let me make it, you know, I don't think that part is even clear. I think a lot of people know that once you go into the military and you're in basic training, you don't have a choice in the shots that you get. You actually get a whole series of shots just while you're in basic training. And while you are active duty, you're getting boosters all the time. So you're not getting vaccine choice in any way, shape, or form while you are serving, while you're active duty. As veterans, currently, we can go into the VA hospital and we can refuse the flu shot or whatever shot they want to give us. We can say, no, we don't want that shot. If this bill becomes law, we will not get that option to say no or to opt out.
Or you risk losing your benefits? Is that the caveat?
I believe that's the caveat as I've looked through the bill, from what I could see of the bill, that, and this has been a big rumor for a while, the fact that if you refuse any kind of care that's recommended through the VA, that you can lose your medical benefits if they see fit. If you have cancer and you refuse chemotherapy, that would be a perfect example of that, or you know, any kind of treatment like that. So that's really a scary precedent, I think.
Oh, yes, very scary. Are there benefits other than medical benefits that might be denied you?
It's, you know, it's not mentioned in the bill, but, you know, many, many veterans, of course, get pensions or get military pensions or widow or widower pensions. You know, we don't know the scope of this bill, and, of course, it can be rewritten. It can be put in front of committee and played around with, and the verbiage changed. So any of that could be affected, yes.
Well, they're talking about tracking vaccinations as well, and they basically are saying sharing information between the Department of Defense and another department. I don't have it directly in front of me, but I can pull it out. Regardless, they talk about tracking the veterans' families, and including neighborhoods, entire communities where there is a large number of veterans or servicemen. So I thought, wow, boy, that's a lot of tracking that goes far beyond the veterans themselves.
So where do we draw the line here? You know, medical care is supposed to be about a freedom of choice, and that's what most veterans believed they were doing when they went active duty and went into the military, was to provide choices for the American people, and people would have rights, individual rights. But this is sounding more and more like medical tyranny, which is really, really frightening in scope.
Well, certainly the children in California and West Virginia and Mississippi, in order to go to school, have to experience medical tyranny if they want to participate, homeschooling being the only option. So basically, any kind of a benefit is denied you if you don't want to be fully vaccinated, be it school or be it health care or possibly a pension.
Right. Right.
Well, that's huge. And the scope of this is broader than we imagined upon further investigation. The scope of this would be entire communities. I am kind of speechless here in terms of tracking people. And the whole idea of tracking people for any reason is, to me, offensive. I'm assuming this would offend you as well.
But we have to keep in mind that with the Patriot Act and everything else that's become law over the past 15 years, which, you know, is really, it started with the Patriot Act and it branched out into so much more. And, you know, willingly, most of the American people voted for these selected leaders. I say selected as an S-elected. Because they were selected because of our fraudulent election systems. But most people went to the polls and elected these people that put these laws into place. So with the loss of privacy, with the loss of our rights to dictate what's happens to us medically, we don't have very many rights left, and our nation has really become a shade of what it was before. So this directly affects especially the older veterans, like I said, who thought they were doing the right thing by going into the military to fight for our rights, and later get, you know, many of us finding out as we came out that, you know, we were bamboozled, and basically we were there to uphold, you know, the rights of the corporations and the rights of our government to create a revenue stream through whatever mission was taking place. So this is just one of many disparaging things to happen to veterans over the course of most recent years. I really don't know where to go from here or how to tell people, because most people are going to think that this is a conspiracy theory and they're going to blow it off. So my main thing is how do we get the information out to the masses, you know?
Well, you have a radio program called Wise Women, and that the right. link to that is directly under the screen. When you open the link to this radio program, you'll see that. But I would like to say that what I do is I stand in public places, and I have called a press conference of the mainstream media. I will not be doing that ever again because they showed up, and instead of I was trying to get the mayor to veto a mandated flu shot for the youngest annually and in order to attend daycare through preschool. And the what happened when I got home, even though NBC was there, I did a 40-minute interview with the New York Times and with Fox News, and there were other cameras there as well. I can't tell you where they were all from. I was quite concentrated on getting the message out, which was to overturn the previous mayor's mandate for the youngest. So what happened when I got home was there was a 20-minute report on CBS advocating for giving children under 1 year, one and under, two flu shots, and by all means pregnant women should get flu shots as well. Now this is two instead of one, two under one and pregnant women, and this is after the CDC had actually come out admitting it doesn't work. So this was pretty startling, and as I say, I do hold press conferences, but for the alternative media. I air things on public access television, and I encourage everybody to utilize this free service. The pharmaceutical companies utilize it to promote vaccines. Please, you utilize it to educate people. Now, Anita mentioned the ingredients in vaccines, and the common ones that are listed on the CDC are, in alphabetical order, that would be aluminum, antibiotic, formaldehyde, mercury, and MSG. Those are the common components. They, however, just mandated an unapproved new meningitis vaccine. They removed the what they're calling an adjuvant, which is dimerosal or mercury, from it, and they replaced that with E. coli. So certainly the Gulf War veterans received anthrax in their vaccines. Have I said anything that you would want to be in the same room with, let alone injected into your bloodstream? Tell me when I do.
No. And you know, I was in the service in the 80s, so it was a complete different a schedule of vaccines that were given to me that were given, you know, they were slightly different than what was given to Gulf War veterans, which, of course, was, you know, 10 years later for the first Gulf War. But I remember the gauntlet. We actually had to go in through a gauntlet of medical workers, and they used air guns on our arms. So there was no needles or no medical waste. They could load up the gun and shoot the next person. And so I got maybe 5 to 6 to 7 vaccinations on each arm as I was going through the gauntlet. And
wow.
And I just remember, you know, I remember just being extremely ill. And it's tough to be ill in basic training. I mean, you can't lay down in your bed or anything, but I was extremely ill for about 2 days. So, as were some other women that were actually in my flight of 50 women. So there's no telling what we got. Experimental ingredients could have been involved, and they also run similar experimental programs with prisoners that are through the Department of Corrections. So we are truly the throwaway people, you know.
Right. But I have to ask you, you're talking about unknown ingredients. Unless they're the antidote to the known ingredients, you know, the known ingredients are so bad. I can't think of things worse than the known ingredients.
Right, right. And, you know, you were just talking about some of the ingredients and the flu shots and the new recommendations or the new schedule of the influenza shot. And I'm looking on this CDC flyer, which has the adult schedule. And as I scrolled down, I think it was page 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Okay, influenza, live attenuated LAIV, severe allergic reaction, and anaphylaxis to any component of the vaccine or to a previous dose of any influenza vaccine. In addition, ACIP recommends that LAIV not be used in the following populations: pregnant women, immunosuppressed adults, adults with egg allergy of any severity, adults who have taken influenza antiviral medications, amantadine, rimetadine, zanamivir, I can't pronounce them, within 48 hours. Avoid use of these antiviral drugs for 14 days after the vaccination. So they're saying now it's okay for pregnant women and babies under 1 year. But their documentation is otherwise. So.
Right, exactly. And not only that, they say if you have a history of Guillain-Barré, there's another advisory that says don't take it if you have a history of Guillain-Barré. Well, that is what the flu shot causes. So if you have a history of it, you are already miserably disabled and possibly on a breathing mechanism as well. So in Australia, it is illegal to give the flu shot to children 5 and under, but in New York City, it's mandated. On the inserts, one insert I saw said 4 and under, there has been no testing. Another insert said don't give it to children, give it to children 6 months and up. On the same insert, it said don't give it to children under 2. So, I mean...
And I'm reading, as I continue to read as we're discussing this, it says other chronic medical conditions, other chronic lung diseases, chronic cardiovascular disease, excluding isolated hypertension, diabetes, chronic renal or hepatic disease, hematologic disease, neurological disease, and metabolic disorders. So as I'm reading this, I just want to make you aware, because you may not know, diabetes is, I would call it an epidemic, especially here in Florida where there's a large population of veterans and there's a large population of elderly people. And within the VA, and this is right on the VA website, 25% of veterans have diabetes, 25%, 1 in 4. And what's really amazing is the general population is only at 8%.
Well,
so my question is, my question is, how did I get my diabetes? Did I get it through some other, you know, vaccination? Did I get it through some kind of medication? How did that happen to me? Because for that high percentage and for that disparaging different number between the general population and veterans, and this is also warning that precautions should be taken with the flu vaccine if the person has diabetes and all these other conditions. How many, that rules so many people out just right there, just from the things we've discussed.
So how can they make mandatory something that the insert to the vaccine or the warnings associated with the vaccines, how can they do that? I guess, it appears anything can be done for no reason. You know, we don't have to justify it. We just have to do it. And medical exemptions are a really good example of this. You can get a medical exemption in California if your child is dead, but almost no other reason. It is so stringent. Your child has to be so disabled that they can't even attend school to get a medical exemption, okay? So that's a ruse, and the number of people who have it are infinitesimal. And the same goes here in New York. We have a total of religious and medical exemptions of 0.8%. Now, I'm sure more than 0.8% of people have requested them, and that would be religious, includes religious. But they are not giving them. And I'm not fighting for exemptions. Everybody else in creation is. I'm fighting to rid ourselves of vaccines entirely based on the ingredients, the known reactions, and the intent to harm. There's a lot of intent to harm that has been revealed since 2011 that we cannot ignore.
Explain exactly what that means in legal terms, because I'm not sure I understand that part.
Okay. There was an article published in 2012 about the findings of Dr. Lucija Tomljenović. And she had basically gotten a Freedom of Information Act, which normally takes 20 to 30 days to turn over. It took her 7 years and a judge's order to get documents regarding vaccination. What was revealed in these documents is, among many things, is the intent to give you the disease they claim to prevent. And that is a huge right there. There were also intent to prevent safety studies, intent on many levels. But, you know, there are documents going back over 30 years showing that the measles vaccine creates autism. So that's intent. When you know that and you continue to do that, that is intent. It's a, you know, there's a cover-up. And there's intent. There's a huge issue that was revealed by RFK Jr. in an article that keeps disappearing from Salon and Rolling Stone and is now on thinktwice.com. And that is the pharmaceutical companies and the government meeting at Simpson Wood, knowing the effect of thimerosal on children, the disabling effect of thimerosal on children, and just seeking damage control to cover it up, not pulling it off the shelves. Many countries have pulled the HPV Gardasil vaccine or Cervarix vaccine, while we, in the knowledge of what this is doing to our girls, are now saying, oh, wow, that's happening? Well, let's now give it to the boys. You know, that's not the reaction one should have upon learning that now that vaccine is causing cervical cancer in teenagers. So why, in that knowledge, must we now give it to the boys instead of why, in that knowledge, don't we pull it off the shelf?
Right, right. Right, exactly. It should be pulled off the shelves. And this intent to harm, are attorneys better able to actually, are they able to do any kind of litigation based on intent to harm? Does that change the legal aspect of any of this?
That's a really good question. I don't have the answer to it because, that's a good question. I don't know. I wish I knew.
Yeah, because I would say that would give them more leeway to litigate, you know.
Well, I have to tell you, there's something different about vaccines than all pharmaceutical drugs. And I believe this is the crux of the issue, even more so than Congress declaring war on our children by removing liability from the pharmaceutical companies and the doctors.
Right.
They did that
right
to our children. And 3.5 times the number of vaccines our kids are expected to absorb as a result of that. However, there is an even more important issue, and that is the FDA's classification. That's the key word, classification. These are not classified as pharmaceutical drugs, and therefore no gold standard of testing must be performed on them. Instead, they are classified as a health program. Now, that precludes gold standard testing. That's not necessary. However, what else is not necessary is possibly when they promote vaccines on television, unlike pharmaceutical drugs, they never tell the reactions you can expect. When you're in a doctor's office and you're being offered a vaccine for your child and you're not informed of the reactions to it that are right on the insert that the doctor has. And where are the lawsuits there? In Germany, if a doctor does not fully inform you of the reactions that your child may encounter, then you can sue him. In this country, I know I've interviewed over 300 parents of vaccine-injured children. I don't know one instance of that.
Right, right. Do you
so informed
think that,
consent is not even available. It's not available in this country.
Do you think that carrying around a package, you know, one of the inserts or a group of the inserts when you actually go to your child's doctor is helpful or adult? I mean, we have to speak on the adult level too now. But or do you think we need to be finding alternative methods of health care on our own? Without doctor's involvement.
Well, you know what? Hey, I'm the interviewer. You answer that question, Anita.
Well, you know, I'm used to being the interviewer and doing, you know, asking questions of the interviewee. I think that's our option. I really think that it's time to step away from the corporatized medicine and find integrative ways, you know, to get our health care and maybe community-based health care and just develop our own systems of that underground. You know,
right.
You know, because the minute we do it out in the open, people will be arrested practicing medicine without a license. But if we all go underground and perform it on our own with herbs and natural cures the way it used to be done, there really isn't anybody that can say we can't do that. They don't have enough people to enforce the fact that we're doing that, you know?
Well, what's really sad is all the children who are vaccine damaged, nothing that their insurance will cover can help them. So if
right.
they want to hire someone who has knowledge in reversing the symptoms they are suffering, then they have to pay out of pocket. So this is
right.
A huge setback because everybody who has a child who is severely vaccine damaged is at their, you know, they're at the end of their ropes when it comes to money. And to know that everything they get from the pharmaceutical industry is just worsening their child's condition. I will give you an example. It's important. Our audience hears this. A friend of mine whose child suffered severely disabled from the DTaP vaccine. Among the things that were wrong with him were he had seizures, like two or three seizures a day. He was put on seizure medication that drove him to 100 seizures a day. And on the package insert, turns out it said may cause seizures. Well, it sure did. He went from two or three to 100 a day. His seizures were very, very hurtful. His entire body cramped, cut off his air supply, and he turned blue 100 times a day. So cannabis did in fact stop the seizures. It did not reverse all of his other remarkable conditions, horrifying, but at least it got him out of 100 times a day cramping up and turning blue. So that cost, he lives in Colorado. It is legal. It was medical cannabis. And it was the same price as his mortgage. So eventually this child died. I mean, it had to happen. You can't turn blue 100 times a day and not eventually run out of air. So this
right.
is the yeah. And this is one shot. That was a 3-dose, one shot. And the he was 55 pounds. He did not recognize his father, who was his full-time caretaker. And at least the cannabis gave him relief from outrageous levels of pain.
Right. Wow. Hello?
Yes. And, well, I just want to say that people in the military, they get a lot of vaccines, and their children do as well, but they're already starting out with a parent whose toxicity level is off the charts. So I know another child who's even more severely damaged, the daughter of a military woman. And on top of all these other symptoms this other child had, he was blind, he had liver failure, and cerebral palsy. So that, on top of my other friend who was not did not serve in the military, the child who got the DTaP with a complete a bill of clean health beforehand wound up with those other symptoms as well.
It's, you know, the first time I heard about any of this was when I was still, I was newly arrived back to the United States in the 80s, and we had been given the flu shot regularly as active duty people overseas. And somebody had said to me, if you get a bunch of those flu shots in a row for like several years, like 4 or more years, you're going to end up with Alzheimer's. And that really frightened me. And I said, I'm not going to take any more of the flu shots. And I stopped taking them at that point, but I probably had 4 or 5 of them in a row. And
well,
I haven't taken them since.
I read an article recently that if you take this flu shot for 2 years running, you're practically guaranteed to get a flu. So it actually reduces your ability to fight the flu. I
right.
Had a friend who's a nurse who worked in an emergency room, and she said 90% of the emergency flu cases had been vaccinated against the flu.
Yeah, so I don't even understand that. And I don't even, you know, all of this stuff about the shedding, you know, the shedding of these diseases too, which means after you get vaccinated, you can actually pass the condition on to somebody else for like 2 weeks.
Yeah, and sometimes longer. And they were saying one man had been shedding polio for years who was vaccinated against it. However, this is the fallacy is that children who are unvaccinated are a danger to those who are vaccinated, which makes zero sense. But in fact, the children who are vaccinated are the ones shedding the disease to the unvaccinated. But luckily, the unvaccinated have a healthy immune system, and they are far less likely to catch anything.
Right. And that's
yeah,
as it should be. I mean, if we believe in the divine order of things, you know, no matter what religion we are, you know, I believe that the body is a miracle, how it all works together. And I think all religions and faith-based systems believe that way, that when we see what the body can do on its own, it's just miraculous. And we had, in the olden days, I mean, our bodies had to be able to fight off all kinds of things, diseases, unsanitary conditions. I mean, if our bodies weren't programmed to do that already, I don't think the human race would have survived.
And you're bringing up sanitation, which is I just posted an interview with Lawrence Turner, who's a plumber, and he did a whole interview with me about how improved sanitation eradicated disease, not vaccination, that took a deep bow for it.
Wow. Right. There was, I watched a great show with you before we did, before we started this show, and you were speaking to Alfred Labremont Weber. And
yes.
He had made reference to the flu, the flu back in the turn of the century, 1918,
I believe. Yeah, the Spanish flu.
The Spanish flu. And he was saying a lot of that was created, and then their aspirin was given as a cure. I'm not sure I really understood that, because I understood that that was a flu that was incapacitating and it killed a lot of people. But basically the way he said it was that it was man-made. It was human-made.
Right. It was, you were vaccinated against it, therefore thereby giving it to you, and then you were administered aspirin, which was obviously, if you were told this is the cure, people were overdosing on what they were hoping would be the cure, and in fact, that coupled with the vaccine is what killed them. So 50 million, it is estimated, died during the Spanish flu, and I'd like to know how many wars you have to fight to kill 50 million people. And the Spanish flu, with the vaccinations and subsequent aspirin, killed that many.
Do you think that those numbers might have been exaggerated?
They said as many as 100 million. So I'm trying to be conservative here.
Right, right.
And the other gentleman who's on the program was Dr. Shiv Chopra, who works with Health Canada. He is a whistleblower, and he still works. He's still an advisor to the World Health Organization. So he's a highly reputable gentleman. He's right now speaking out about GMOs. He said, I've said everything I can say about vaccines. And he, of course, is pointing to the ingredients. And, you know, once you realize what they are, you can Google reactions to any one of these components. I bet you would have to call poison control if you drank it, but it's perfectly fine to inject it directly into your bloodstream.
Hmm. That's interesting. Now, isn't Dr. Chopra, is this Deepak Chopra's relative?
No.
Is it
no,
the same family?
It's a pretty common name, but this is Dr. Shiv Chopra, C-H-I-V.
Shiv Chopra, okay.
He's in Canada.
And it's interesting that somebody that would be an advisor to the World Health Organization would be someone that people would consider a whistleblower. He's just telling the truth about what he knows. You know?
Well, he certainly has been a target, since he would not sign off on a vaccine that Merck and Maurice Hilleman, who was the head of the Merck vaccine division, and you've seen the video of him from PBS saying that the cancer was in the SV40, the SV40 cancer component was in the polio vaccines, which 98 million Americans were given. Which is why everybody your age and my age has cancer, or 98 million of us. So he refused to sign off on one of the vaccines, and the head of Merck, who was this Maurice Hilleman fellow, came to bully him into it, and he wouldn't submit. He would not approve it. And more people have to act like Dr. Shiv Chopra acted. Every pediatrician should act like Dr. Shiv Chopra acted.
I wasn't sure whether you had seen the series, The Truth About Cancer, but I watched that. I watched all 9 episodes. I was really impressed with how it was put together. I learned so much by watching that. It was just incredible. And for your listeners and mine, I was diagnosed in February with CLL leukemia. So, you know, I'm doing a lot of research on just healing on my own and self-healing, and I'm not in any kind of treatment or anything like that. My numbers are great, and my labs are great, and I'm grateful. But one of the things
leukemia along with diabetes have skyrocketed in children. You know, when you and I were growing up, did you know any child who had cancer? I knew one child who had diabetes in my entire
life. I didn't know anybody that had either, believe it or not. And you know, these are epidemic now, and I put a lot of the blame on Monsanto, because many of the veterans that have diabetes were exposed to Monsanto ingredients, including Agent Orange. But now we have the glyphosate pretty much everywhere. I mean, I live, you know, on a golf course, in a golf course community, and they spray the Roundup right in the golf course. So, you know, so I'm around it, and I can't get away from it.
Yeah, Dr. Stephan speaks a lot about that. But I have to tell you, diabetes and leukemia are outcomes from vaccines. I'm not saying other poisons in our environment that we're breathing are not also hurting us. But there's no more effective way of taking someone down than putting these poisons directly into the bloodstream with no way of filtering it out.
Right.
So when you eat something, you drink something, even when you breathe something, you have a filter. There is no filter for these injected poisons.
You got them in your system. There's no way to get them out. Yep. So I'm learning to live with all of this, but you know, for me as a veteran to go to the VA and say, okay, you know, I'll take the shot of anything they want to give me. For one thing, my immune system is not working the same. For another thing, I have these pre-existing conditions already, but yet you want to give me a shot that has all these warnings on the package insert. That's really scary. That is intent to harm. That right there is intent to harm.
There's a lot and, of it. I only have four parts of it on my Build Vaccine Free 2015, but I've done several shows on other issues of intent to harm from the CDC and other, you know, world organizations. There's just a whole lot of intent. I tell people if I were to write all the intent, it would go up the side of a skyscraper.
Right. One of the doctors that was on that Truth About Cancer, and I can't recall his name, but he was very outward spoken about how if the doctor is giving you something that he know or suggesting a treatment or giving you a shot or giving you a medicine that he knows is going to kill you, then is that doctor not committing genocide?
Right.
Now, that was a good question.
This is the obvious point. This is really obvious. And I keep telling people who work for peace, I said, because you don't see a bomb explode and blood splattered everywhere doesn't mean people aren't dying and dying in a vaster quantity. But it will never be reported as associated with the vaccine. So there you go.
Right. And what do we say to people when we're talking to them about it and they're so close-minded and we're the anti-vaxxers and we believe in conspiracy theories and the information that we can use to back up what we're saying is coming from blogs? How do you tackle that? I have no clue.
It's the first thing you mentioned, Anita. You keep the conversation where they will never, ever allow it to go on the ingredients. Because I'm running for mayor right now, and this is my platform, Sally O.L. Cordy for mayor, vaccine-free NYC, because poison is illegal.
Right. It is. And to use it is intent to harm, and it's genocide. And we have to start, I think we have to start using those words. I think once we start to use those words, people will sit up and take notice and say, hey, you know,